The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
If an SEC coach can eliminate one phrase from his vocabulary, might be the ultimate good news for his fans. It is Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday, and we're talking college football like we do every single day. I appreciate everybody coming here. It's been such a blessing. We're pushing 10 years now doing it, so thank y'all. Said if an SEC coach, an SEC head coach, that'd be Lane Kiffin. I say, if Lane Kiffin can eliminate one phrasing from his vocabulary, his vernacular. I will say, if Lane Kiffin can eliminate one mindset, one thought process, one gray matter variable, if Lane Kiffin can just filter out one little tiny two-word phrase, it may equal the ultimate good news for his fan base. I want to start with the really good news as it is. Ole Miss is good enough this coming season, I believe, to have gotten into a four-team playoff. I'd always said that Ole Miss was one of those teams that simply, like, entry to the field was the barrier. Did Ole Miss have seasons when they would have been good enough to win two games in a row against opponents of that ilk? Absolutely. Ole Miss could have never gotten into the 14 playoff. What do you mean, Chuck? Well, they never even won their division. And Ole Miss was in the huge, giant 85% of Division I teams that unless you won your conference, you weren't going to the playoffs. They weren't. There was no scenario where a non-SEC champion, Ole Miss, was going to be given a bid by the 14 committee. So that's what I'm... And what if we were undefeated and then lost the SEC title game? Georgia, two straight national championships and all that they are, just lived out that scenario and the committee was like, sorry. Florida State didn't even lose. And they, so you tell me, you what if we were 12-0 and all we did was lose the, I don't know, the SEC title game by a field goal? No. There was zero chance that Ole Miss was ever going to, and we could have won the SEC, you didn't even win the West. And now you never will win, you will never win the West again. Those chances are gone. Ole Miss and others who never won a division, you will have a chance again when the SEC splits into four divisions, four five-team divisions, maybe six if they in the Big Ten act in concert and say, we'll take these 48 teams and everybody else bug off. So you'll be in a division again, but it'll be a little while. So you never even won the West, which means you weren't going to win the conference, and with no scenario where you got an at-large bid, guess what? Entry to the field was the problem. You didn't have the cachet. Ohio State had the cachet. Bama had the cachet. Georgia had the cachet, and they didn't even get it last year. Florida State got way more cachet than Ole Miss. Like, you know what it is. If you're an Ole Miss fan, you know what's what. So entry to the field was the issue, not being able to gird up your loins and beat Oklahoma and then Clemson. Like, both of those things, you had to have some really good performances, but both those things, yeah, I'll listen to you. I probably won't talk a lot, but I'll listen to you and state your case. I look at Ole Miss and what they're bringing back this year. and what they've added, what they're bringing back to Oxford from College Station, what they're bringing back to Oxford from Columbia, South Carolina, like what they're bringing to week one when the Paladins show up and say, hey, where's that check? What Ole Miss brings to the field when they run through the banner Saturday, August 31st, home game versus Furman, that team is good enough to have gotten in a 4-team playoff, I believe. I think when you look at everything that is returning on that team and then what they've added, and then on top of it, Jackson Dart. Talk about explosive offenses. Somebody came out with their list, most explosive offenses for the coming season. And it was, maybe it's Sporting News or 247. 247. Most explosive offenses for the coming season. And Ole Miss was third. Do you know the first thing that jumped out to me when I saw this ranking? And by the way, it's March 13th, and I've always told you, Pat Forty said is not a topic. On March 13th, when you get something like 247, a legit group like that, previewing offenses, that's different than let's talk about the rankings. That's really good breakdowns of what's going on that side of the football. 247, top 10 most explosive offenses in college football entering the 2024 season. Ole Miss is at three. Two offenses ahead of them. What jumped out to me about the other two? Number one, Ohio State, brand new quarterback. Number two, Oregon, brand new quarterback. Really good quarterbacks. Will Howard, big giant kid who is about to have what he hopes the year that springboards him into the NFL. And then Dylan Gabriel's like, all right, Quack Attack, here I come. They both played a lot, experience, but they're new. Jackson Dart and Lane Kiffin, hand in a glove, pages in a letter. So familiar, experience with one another. And I would say by at least technicality, Jackson Dart, he's tough too. By technicality, he won that job twice. Now, it really was like one and a third because he was always going to be the quarterback last year. We wanted to, I mean, there were other guys who could have shown up and taken the job. He was going to be the quarterback. Lane had picked his guy. Lane knew his guy, and boy, did he get it right. And so, against all this other stuff I can tell you about, that they have folks coming home. You know what? I could have gone to the draft, Trey Harris, big giant Trey Harris. Could have gone to the draft. Nope, staying home. Oxford, one more year. That's Trey Harris. They've had the transfers. I talked about them. And they have Jackson Dart. They have an almost elite quarterback. He's got a PJ. Almost elite quarterback. And I say that only because he's not a candidate to throw for, like, you know, 4,700 yards and 43 touchdowns, I don't think. But they have an almost elite guy. And when you go over to this other category that we can't put a number on, so most of us, my hand raised, most of us, we need a number that we're familiar with. Well, leadership, experience, comfortable, whatever, ability for Lane Kiffin on a whim to go, you know that play we run where the do it except change the tight, whatever. And Jackson Dart's like, oh, way ahead of you, coach. He's not, Lane is coaching Jackson. He's not teaching Jackson. That's always the dividing line. Like, no matter how talented that 16-year-old who was supposed to be a high school junior, no matter how talented he was, when he showed up, you were teaching him college football. You're just coaching Jackson. So all that other stuff, and you've got Jackson Dart. Well, you also have a phrasing that you need to get rid of, and I would say it's more of a mindset and is 100% on the head coach. House money. If Lane Kiffin can filter out, and I mean not the aggressiveness, not the want to go for it, not that, because a lot of it makes sense. Folks, when you've got a 4th-and-1 on the opponent's 48-yard line, if you were to send your punting team, and I'm talking opening drive of the game, literally like all things are as equal as possible, 4th-and-1 on the opponent's 48, you took the opening drive, went down to the 40, you send your punt team out there? Folks are going to look at you like you just sent 11 guys onto the field without face masks. Like, what era are you coaching from? You're going for this. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about even one brain cell, one little deep recess of the gray matter saying house money. Coach, we got house money. Do you know what house money translates to? We were never really supposed to be here. House money translates to we were never really supposed to be in this position, have this good of a chance, so what the hey, let's go ahead and do this. That opening drive against Alabama, get your popcorn. Like, there, Lane has said things before where, like, in the moment, he's like, all right, I got to back this up. I gave Eli Drinkwitz praise last week. Because he told the story. He was at We Stand on Business, Josh, and Josh Heupel, and everybody else was like, what? Eli, he came clean. He fessed up. Mad respect. He was like, it was just sort of something that came out of practice in a moment. We were having some emotion, and it kind of came out. You stand on business at Missouri. And he told the players, he'd say it to the – I'll say it to Josh Heupel's face if y'all win. So the players were walking behind me. He was like, I knew how I was going to look like a Jaguar. He said, but I wanted to have the respect of my team versus everybody else. Folks, it didn't matter what Eli looked like to Josh Heupel or me or the nation or whatever. It didn't matter. The game was over. Like, there were no more plays left. When Lane Kiffin is deciding good angel or bad, you know, devil, like which shoulder he's going to follow, it's not after the game during a handshake. It's during the opening possession when you get to the Alabama 5-yard line. And he looks over at that left shoulder and the devil's going, do it, man. Be big. Chest out. You flex. Because remember what you said on TV? Well, you got to be a dude now. You dug in. You said it. Well, you got to. And he goes for it. And they did all. Do you know what the most deflating thing is possible to your players? They did everything that they were asked to, and they executed properly, and then you took the points away. That wind out of the sails, brother. We did everything that you told it. If you do this, you will be successful. It's still 0-0. We did so much right on this possession, and now they have the football, and we don't have any points. Oh, and by the way, they get the ball coming out of the second half now. If Lane Kiffin can eliminate the mindset of, do you think Nick Saban ever was in a game when he was like, well, you know what? I'm coaching with house money anyway. Do you know what Kirby Smart, do you think, oh, I'm coaching with house money anyway. You want to be rich? Do what rich people do best you can. You want to be skinny? Do what skinny people do. You want to be Nick Saban or Kirby Smart or a national championship head coach? Do what they do. And they never think, ah, you know what? We're coaching with house money anyway. Let's go ahead and do this really, really super unwise thing that may mean we just had an 11-play drive where we did a lot of stuff right. And if I make a wrong decision here because of something I said in pregame on CBS, it may cost us points. But I'm going to do it anyway because that's what it is. Ah, house money. Not supposed to be here anyway. If you want to go Google Lane Kiffin Ole Miss fourth down attempts, just start go scrolling down, man. There's been a lot of success. There's been a lot of not success. You're not supposed to have something so clearly leaning in one direction just on a Google search. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss, fourth down attempts. I don't tilt the discussion there. I don't put a thumb on the scale. Look at those. And I just started going through reading them, all the different games. Well, it's house money. He's in Athens last year. Opening possession, fourth down attempt, fake punt. Which like, he's doing it. And success, and it kind of kept him close. They lost like 52-17. So you got to eliminate that, man. Because you know what you also don't see? From a Nick Saban, a Kirby Smart, a Ryan Day sort of thing. One really negative event suddenly turn into three or four because the head coach thinks, oh, well, F it. We already have one big screw up. Like, you just don't, man. They normally don't have games turn into 52-17. Not normally. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Come back, jump into it on this Wednesday.
always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Full day on the Duncan Newsmaker line. It's Chuck Oliver Show, bringing all the experts, insiders, coaches, players, certainly players now, name, image, likeness era. Everybody you want to hear from specifically today, courtesy of Duncan. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, talking Penn State. We've had Ben on before. It's always top-notch information if you're a Penn State fan or fan of somebody who plays in Nittany Lions. We got you covered. Ethan McDowell, the Wolf Packer, on three. We're talking Grayson McCall and the latest NC State news as they continue to keep that roll going. And then team I want to mention a little bit right now, Georgia Bulldogs. Going to talk with Jake Rowe from Dogs HQ, bottom of hour two, about Kirby and everything that he has already accomplished in one specific way. UGA's last on-campus loss was 2019 versus South Carolina. It was a double overtime loss where the best kicker in America missed, I think, two field goals. And Will Muschamp in South Carolina with their quarterback out and maybe DeCarrion Johnson, he might have thrown for 3 yards in the second half. I'm trying to remember. There was some number that it was just unreal, and they won anyway. South Carolina, they earned it. They got the dub that day. They were tough. It was a Javon Kinlaw in the middle of the line. Just wreaking havoc, man. And so that day, back in 2019, South Carolina rolled into Athens, got the dub. And that was Georgia's last on-campus loss. The past seven seasons, one home loss. Now, I offer context to explain a little beyond that cold, hard fact. One point of context is Georgia never plays UF on campus. So every other year, there's a chance to play a monster program, like traditionally, historically, last 40-plus years. That it just doesn't exist except for the two-year Jacksonville Jaguars thing. So Georgia doesn't play UF on campus, so there's one bit of context. Second bit of context to the fact that the past seven seasons, one on-campus, quote, home loss for the Georgia Bulldogs. Here's more context. The semi-annual Georgia Tech game on campus, it devolved in very recent years into a not competitive thing. They weren't after the same goals. They just weren't really doing the same thing. Georgia was trying to get through that game to get ready for the next Saturday in Atlanta. Like, that's just kind of, that's where it went to. So that's the second point of context. Third point of context is up until this season and including beyond the Georgia Tech game, when UGA has played a monster non-conference opponent, most times been Atlanta or Charlotte or that ilk. Clemson this year, that's in Atlanta, for instance. And so, yes, Georgia's last, quote, home loss. I will rephrase that. I will use something to describe. I've talked about the Alabama Crimson Tide. They went 10 seasons between, quote, home losses, actually losing an on-campus game. And then Southern Miss beat them in 81 or 82. And I was like, my gosh, they didn't lose a home game? 10 years, how do you do that? In a conference like the SEC, that was a little sixth grade me. And a friend of mine who was a big Bama fan was like, nah, really home games. So I got to remember, play Auburn and Tuscaloosa. We play Tennessee, LSU, big games are in Birmingham. So they didn't really play on campus. Well, Georgia plays plenty of huge games on campus. And so the great news that I have for the Georgia fans listening right now is the past seven seasons, you have one home loss. I have three times as many points of context as you do on-campus losses. I have three ways to, quote, explain how only having one on-campus loss is not really a revealing way to say that. Here's all the ways. Here's all the extra information you need. Do you know what kind of great news it is when you have somebody explaining away that you only have one on-campus loss in seven seasons? And all three of those points are true, but they're almost anecdotal. Doesn't matter. If you had Florida in Athens every other year, would you have had a loss between now and back going back to 17? Maybe, maybe not. You do play Georgia Tech. You don't have the loss. Are they getting better? Yes. Should they be a real threat to you? Not right now. Still not right now. And that we play most of the really, really tough non-conference games. Well, we do that in Atlanta or Charlotte. No, that ends as well. Got on-campus games lined up against UCLA and Florida State and Louisville and just various and sundry, you know, good programs there. They've got a home slate brewing in 2030. It includes North Carolina A&T. I believe they're the Aggies. It includes North Carolina A&T. It also includes home games with Clemson, Ohio State, and Georgia Tech. Wowzers. There's no way that they've got to rejigger one of those, you would think. But ever so often, the home fans look around and go, well, you know what? I've sent in my donation for 17 straight years, and I buy the tickets every year, and it's going to come around finally for me. That 2030? I don't know. Maybe they move one of those. But those are home and aways. So the way it lines up and is scheduled right now, no. That big point of context, well, if we're going to play somebody big at a conference, it's going to be somewhere other than Athens. Not every other time now. They're going to Clemson? Yeah, they're doing that in 29. They're going to CBUS? Doing that in 31. 2030, both of them are slated for Athens and Georgia Tech. That's when it comes around to Athens for the old clean old-fashioned hate as well. So all I have is context, and it doesn't explain away or make less impressive anything of what Kirby's got going in Athens right now. So if you look at those future schedules and you see, for instance, they're playing Clemson and Atlanta to kick off the season, that is sort of the last go-round because the very next year they open the season in Los Angeles against UCLA.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Wednesday on Chuck Oliver Show, we're doing what we do, gosh, every other day, talking college football. Been doing it 10 years now, 9 states and 60 sticks. Thank you all for the blessing. So, Drew Allard is rolling right along through the 2023 season. He's like, yeah, it's just like high school. It's all just porch swings and apple pie. And then Ohio State happened, and he was not real super-duper that day. And then the Michigan game happened, and it was just kind of gruesome. And I don't know. Mike Yersin's a really good coach, but somebody's got to pay. I don't know. He got whacked. And then the D.C. got hired, and so James Franklin, there's a lot going on in Penn. There's a lot of layers this onion right now. He has two new coordinators, great program, two new coordinators, and suddenly the understandable roadblock, well, dude is in the division with Michigan and Ohio State. No, this is a 12-team playoff now. So big opportunities for James Franklin, big pressure for James Franklin. All right, this is a totally brand new day, and like Penn State is who this 12-team thing was made for. So much to talk about with Nittany Lions. I want to welcome back statecollege.com. That's where he covers Penn State. It's Ben Jones. Ben, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right. A lot to unpack there. Let's talk about, first of all, do you agree my assessment? Penn State, I mean, I'm sure Nittany Lion fans didn't like it, and they remember being national champs. But the reality is the monsters that Ohio State and Michigan had grown into don't like it. But you kind of understood if we were kind of roadblocked a little bit. None of that's true now. I think the 12-team expansion, that's meant for a program like Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that if you look at programs the last 6 or 7 years that have been able to have pretty consistent success at a high level, you know, Penn State's had some downs around the COVID time, but, you know, outside of that, Penn State has been highly successful. And like you said, it's been pretty much win every game except Michigan and Ohio State. So there's no question that if you're a Penn State fan looking to see Penn State make the playoffs, that this model is for you. Now, of course, you know, it just means that it's a different kind of game when Penn State finally gets to play some of these higher-end teams that have been the roadblock. But, you know, Penn State's had success for the most part this last bowl game, notwithstanding, against quality opponents in postseason play. So there's no question, if you're Penn State, you're glad to see that playoff field expand.
James Franklin, I mean, he had pressure and et cetera before, but do you think he views this, like, internally, like his personal room of truth, he views this as an opportunity, or does he view this as, daggummit, the pressure just got ratcheted up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think there's no question that if you're Penn State, and now, you know, the new Big Ten, I think, is going to change the arithmetic for a lot of things. It'll probably be a few years before we figure out what the new normal is for that league, but yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that if the door has widened for teams that can get in, and Penn State has certainly finished in the top 12 and in the last several years has done very well for itself, that you've got to think that it should be in more often than not, that there's going to be pressure there to do that. Now, you know, at the same time, I think that Penn State's success has come from really looking at what's in front of it each and every week and not really getting too far ahead of itself. So, you know, I think that there's no question that James probably feels that pressure, but at the same time, they've certainly found a formula that, for the most part, has found a lot of success, and certainly a lot of teams would be happy to have Penn State's problems.
All right, so let's talk about current times. Drew Aller, it has to be contradictory that I'm talking about a 10-win team in a conference like that, and the quarterback is 25-2. Touchdowns to picks. He had to have a great season. I'm like, nah, he had a pretty good season. Tell me what you think you saw from Drew Aller, because the numbers belie what I think I saw in those two biggest games.
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a lot of things that didn't work in Drew's favor last year. I think there's no question that he was maybe tentative at times, and there were certainly throws that he missed or things that he didn't see. There's no question that Drew himself could have been better. I also think that Penn State probably had its most lukewarm receivers room in really the last decade. Nobody really kind of stepped up the way that they were anticipating. No one was really that number one guy in the way that they needed, the same way that, you know, Jahan Dotson or Parker Washington or KJ Hamler that they've had over the years. They really didn't have that guy. And I think the running game, too, was solid. But I think Nick Singleton and Catron Allen went into the year with a lot of people saying maybe this is one of the better running back rooms in America. They were solid in their own right as well, but never were really quite as explosive. So I think there's a lot of things that played into it. And I think Mike Yurcich, good offensive coordinator, didn't really have the answers. So, you know, to me, you look at it, you go, yeah, Drew needs to be better. But I also think a lot of things around him, quarterback is one of those positions that nothing is impacted more by the players around him quite like a quarterback is.
All right, so if you watch, for instance, the Kansas offense last year, you're like, all right, well, that looks fun. I always have thought that a play caller worth his salt, if you get hired, you go to the quarterback, what do you do well? And then that's how you structure it. Find me the middle ground this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're hoping with Andy Koltunicki, is they say, look, you know, the thing that he really did well at Kansas was getting the most out of what he had. And if you're Penn State, you say, look, we've got more talent than you've ever had at Kansas. We've got more athletes, better quarterback, all these things. And you say, all right, make that work. And I think that that is the plan coming in. But it's also, you know, figuring out what Drew is good at, figuring out what the receivers are good at, the tight ends, the running backs, and leaning into that as well. So I definitely think there's a middle ground. I think any good coach sounded like you said, is going to be able to come in and sort of adapt to the players, not the other way around. But I also think that Andy Koltunicki has some sensibilities offensively that, you know, are, will be a nice change of pace for Penn State. I would expect Penn State to look different than this year in terms of approach than it has really the last 10. And sometimes you just need a fresh start altogether. And certainly I think that he's the guy, a bit like Joe Moorhead, that's going to be able to do that.
You seen Julian Fleming up close? That is an impressive looking kid, isn't he?
Yeah, there's no question that, wow. You know, getting stuck behind Marvin Harrison Jr. is not the same thing as being a bad receiver. So, yeah, that's going to be a big addition for Penn State and a big plus for Penn State that they already had a relationship with him during the recruiting process.
All right, we're going to talk the new DC as well, because I was a big fan of Manny. I was like, it's going to work there. He's going to have some studs over there, and it's all going to be fast forward. I was like, it's going to work, and it worked, and now he's gone. Talk about the new DC, but also talk about Abdul Carter, because he's now up on the line of scrimmage getting in people's faces, right?
Yeah, I mean, to start with the last part, you know, Abdul Carter making the switch from linebacker to defensive end is sort of a reverse Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons in high school was a defensive end, then switched over to linebacker, and obviously is now, you know, one of the better defensive players in the NFL. I think the hope with Abdul moving to the line is certainly a vote of confidence for some of the linebackers that they've got coming back this year, and also a vote of confidence in really what is, you know, Abdul Carter is sort of the quintessential. He's so athletic, so big, so strong that you can make him play just about anything and he'll look good at it. It's going to be interesting and a lot of fun to watch. And I think, like you said, Penn State losing Manny Diaz, you know, certainly you can't say enough good things about the job that he did with that defense. But I think one of the biggest things for Penn State's defense was how much they loved Manny and how much they were willing to fight for him. And I think Tom Allen is a different kind of guy than Manny Diaz. But I also think when you see his energy, see his enthusiasm, see his sort of hoorah attitude, you've got to think that that's something the players are going to buy into as well. And I think that Tom Allen, you know, did a pretty good job at Indiana for what that program is a good defensive mind. Is he Manny Diaz? I guess we'll see. But I think there's no question that he's going to be able to get guys to buy into what he's selling. And half the battle these days is you got to get guys to buy in. And if you do that, you can do a lot of good things.
All right. So there's some places like spring practice. It's super secret and it's just everything short of like gun towers. They've got two new coordinators. Do they have they got to be wide open and get stuff in this spring, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an urgency on install. You know, the media, for the most part at Penn State, you know, we get about once a week, and then the spring practice, you know, spring game is a situation where you get to see at least some of the nuts and bolts and basics. But, yeah, there's no question that I think they feel the pressure this spring to get ahead of the curve because they've got a lot of learning to do. And, you know, if you can do it now and in the fall, it saves you from having to do it in week three. So, there's no question that there's a lot of catching up to do and a lot of things to learn. But certainly, you know, Penn State has gotten used to change and installation. So they're getting better and better at it. And that's really what you have to be able to do these days in college football.
All right. I appreciate your expertise, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic stuff there. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, our Truist reporter for Penn State. Appreciate him coming on and carving out a little time today. Yeah, Manny's gone, and Tom Allen, former IU coach, he's there, and it's a different approach, but it's the same principle. And Manny had been at Mississippi State back in the day, and he'd been at Miami, of course, and so Manny had coached really good players. It was going to be, a sort of solid foundation, a more stable, a whatever it is. I said, he's walking into Penn State. It's going to be Manny's approach with something that is already kind of built. Like, here is a great set of tools. And then Manny was like, all right, I'm going to make this work. I was suspecting that it was going to be a good combination. And for a couple of years, it really was. I'm looking forward to what he does at Duke. But now Penn State's got to move on. Abdul Carter, if you don't, no, I mentioned him last year during the season, and I've said he's a linebacker and he's kind of a thumper. I was like, he's a like a old school-ish mentality guy, and the idea all along was he was going to move up to the line of scrimmage. He and his dad wanted him to start there. So he started at linebacker. So he started there, and now as planned, here he is on the line of scrimmage, and the mentality always fit. I didn't know about that part, the position change already kind of being in the works during the season. I was like, he needs to be up on the line. He needs to be, as soon as the snap, off the edge, bend, turn around that left tackle's hip. I was like, he can do that. And now he's gonna. And so I expected Abdul Carter. I guess what it is, you go from Micah to Chop Robinson, and then you're like, all right, now you're going to step up. So I would actually, if I'm buying Penn State futures, I would look at whoever they have maybe that has that sort of look to him. Oh, he's going to be an edge. He's going to be that next, you know, monster off the edge. I would look at that guy that you said, well, why is he playing linebacker? I thought he would be, that's maybe going to be the next guy because they've done it a couple times. All right, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to wrap up hour one.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Mike Denbrock was at the top, and in our familiarity of knowing each other, from working with each other at Cincinnati for 3 years or 4 years was tremendous. And so I knew if I could get Coach Denbrock to come here and to really lead our offense, that we would have a lot of success on that side of the ball.
I wouldn't have done it, but I didn't have the opportunity as well. That's Marcus Freeman. He's head coach at Notre Dame. Y'all know him. When I say I wouldn't have done it, Marcus Freeman, head coach at Notre Dame, is talking about his new hire at OC, Mike Denbrock, who left LSU. And that's the part I don't think I would have done. I think I would have looked at Garrett Nussmeier. Now, maybe he and Brian Kelly, I don't know. Who ate my tots? Who ate my tots? And, like, Denbrock knew it was Kelly. Every time I just put him down, I went to go get an extra napkin, come back, my tots are gone. There's personalities involved. I mean, like, Lebby understood I'm never going to get credit, even if I am doing the work, which I don't know if I'm going to get to call the plays. Had Lane Kiffin on when he's at FAU, and who did he hire? Maybe Kendall Briles was there. I'm trying to remember. He had an OC, and I was like, you're not calling plays? He said, I'm going to be bored. He says, third quarter of the first game, he says, I'm going to go sit in the stands. So, you know, you kind of want to be in charge, I'm sure. I don't, there's always personalities. There's always, I want more responsibility. I want more of a profile. I want more what? Mike Denbrock, maybe he just wanted to go back to Notre Dame, third trip there. And it's a really outstanding job, and he got crazy paid. The 15th and the 30th, man, they're going to work for him. All of that was already true. And you got to live in Louisiana, which, I mean, you talk about one of the most fun places to be. And that close to New Orleans. Honey, hush. So, and he's already getting broke off, and the best of the best of the best come there, including athletes who don't wear black cleats and are in bad need of a vowel. All right? I'm talking like Malik Nabers. When's the last time you saw that kid wearing a Notre Dame uniform? So, maybe he wanted the ultimate credit. Maybe it wasn't just, hey, I'm the play caller, but the head coach, yeah, he's going to get all the credit. Maybe it was beyond that. How much credit will I ever get if all I'm doing is coaching LSU offensive players? That's silliness. So Marcus Freeman got him a good OC and one who they are familiar with, and you speak the same language, and they do need to take another step. Riley Leonard, I've asked you, how good is he? Pause. Really? How good is he? I know that we all got excited about him last year, and we saw some outstanding. He threw 3 touchdown passes. 4 games against teams that finished as a top 25 squad. Threw 1 touchdown in those games. Fewer than 50% completion percentage in all 4 of them. So, not whatever it's worth. The best, say, emerging, but he's athletic and tough and got a good arm, and he's smart, and he's all these things that are great. And now Mike Denbrock needs him to be an uber-productive quarterback over the course of the entire season, not like in windows, for instance, what they got from Sam Hartman, who I think is overall, like his job, here's the quarterback. And in college, it's wider because it's college and you can do things like run for 1,500 yards if you're a quarterback. But in general, do you know, like for the best offenses, do you know what the quarterback's doing most often? Look, your team's won a national championships. And most often, what is the quarterback doing? The quarterback stands in the pocket and delivers the ball downfield. So, Sam Hartman, way better at that than Riley Leonard. Well, Sam Hartman's gone. So, Marcus Freeman got him a new quarterback, got him a new OC, and you'll see how that works. Gen Pop sports fans, and certainly college football fans, seem to overwhelmingly have the same opinion about one guy, and I do. Talking about Pat McAfee. And when I say Gen Pop sports fans, there's two opinions. And almost everybody I've interacted with falls into one of these two boxes. And college football fans, again, his appearances and who, like, we decided to assign, and he replaced this guy, and I like the other guy better. I don't know if any of that's true. I'm just saying that's what, like, a lot of folks, because we were angry that maybe somebody doesn't have a job anymore, and now this guy's on. Gen Pop sports fans, and then college football fans in particular, you look at Pat McAfee, and for the most part, we do not like Pat McAfee. Or, to some degree, you don't, quote, get Pat McAfee. And do you know what that is saying? I don't like Pat McAfee. Well, that's clear. I don't get Pat McAfee. Do you know what the translation of that is in most cases? It's the same as saying you don't understand why so many others do like him. The first one is clear. I don't like the guy. I don't have much of an opinion. His show, the presentation doesn't seem to be... It doesn't seem to be built for me, but it works for whatever it is that he does. And so, God bless him. When you look at where Pat McAfee has penetrated back to not just college football, but Gen Pop, all right, that's where my opinion, your opinion, those two big, huge, widely shared opinions become irrelevant. If you say you don't like Pat McAfee, okay, that's front and center. If you say I don't get him, you're saying I don't know why other people like him so much because I don't get it. Here's the truth. It doesn't matter what we think about Pat McAfee. We are all thinking about him. There's an opinion. The guy has already won, and I'm talking professionally, lifetime, like guys won. Now, I think this ends at a not so distant point, like this amount of intense interest, but that's just a detail. The guy's an attention magnet. The reason I brought this up today is Pat McAfee and the guys on the couch. There's, I think, three or four guys that do the show with him. I watch it sometimes. When I eat lunch, there's a restaurant I go to sometimes, and they have it on the TVs. So he's got these three or four guys on the couch, and so I don't hear it, but they've got the TVs on above the bar, and so I see the show being it's always similar. They can be on a field, they can be in the studio, they could be at the Super Bowl, whatever. It's just kind of what they do. Pat McAfee and the three or four guys on the couch, they're going to appear in the WWE 2K24 video game. Pat McAfee, Boston Connor, Ty Schmidt, Darius Butler, AJ Hawk. WWE 2K24, and he has announced it himself, Pat McAfee, and so they will appear as characters. There is a expansion pack you can get there, so they're now characters in a mainstream video game. Now, what does that entail as far as money? That's not the point. Additional attention, folks who didn't know him, who know, that's not the point. The point is, all the folks who weren't asked to be included in the game. That's it. It's not, is he good or bad at college football game day? I don't know. The point is, he's the one who got asked. It's not, that is he good or bad at broadcasting from the set on the field where the Super Bowl is about to be played? No, I again, the sound's not on. The point is, he's the one with that access. We pay so much attention to him. I don't know. Guess like I said, I can't even hear him. Maybe it's the look. Maybe it's the presentation. Maybe it's the frenetic pace of thing. I don't know. But it's now an even additional level into the video game / computer game world. So whatever it is we all think of it is irrelevant. The guy's already won.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.